May it please the Court, my name is Paul Turk. I represent the appellants, recreational groups, in this matter. It's my hope to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. This case involves a shift of context a little bit from immigration, asylum, and civil rights to our national forest system, and it involves this circuit's unique restrictions on intervention that are applied against any non-federal parties in suits involving federal land.
And we're not going to, you don't waste your time on that argument. We're bound by our case law, so we're not going to try to overrule.
And I understand that, Your Honor. I'm not asking you necessarily to overrule this circuit's, what I'll refer to as the federal defendant rule.
Right. We know what it is, and we're bound by it.
I think, with due respect, I'm not sure that we know what it is. At least those of us that represent clients in this area are unsure what it is, because this circuit's cases are conflicting and internally inconsistent, and they're applied inconsistently throughout the different districts in this circuit. All right. I also think there is a far narrower grounds for this appeal, which is to reverse and remand with instructions to the district court based on its application of the rule in this particular case. Specifically, the district court here didn't even consider whether limited intervention was proper.
Well, you didn't ask for it. In fact, you specifically, as I read your briefing, you made a strategic decision not to ask the court for that, even on your motion to rehearing. Where did you ever ask the court to grant limited remedial?
We specifically cited Forest Conservation Council, mm-hmm. Your Honor.
Where's your, well, aside from the citation, what can you cite? I looked for it, and I didn't see that that's what you were seeking.
It's cited in the brief. I'm not sure I have.
Well, you cited the case, but you then said something to the effect of that there shouldn't be limits. Intervention should not be denied or limited. So, in other words, you didn't want limited intervention.
Well, first of all, the request for limited intervention is subsumed within the request for full intervention.
And but this not to is say not you don't want it.
Well, I guess I would submit that this is not analogous to, like, objecting to a jury instruction or a highly technical.
Wasn't there a strategic reason behind it, which was essentially you couldn't have appealed that denial? That if you had gotten limited intervention, you couldn't have appealed. Could you
no,
have?
That's not the reason. We would.
Well, is that true that you couldn't have appealed?
If we had been granted limited intervention, I agree with that.
All right. So since that's true, how could we now grant you limited intervention? I mean, essentially, isn't the real posture of this that it's because it was denied that you got an appeal, we decide whether it should have been denied? If we decide that it should have been denied, you presumably could still go back and ask for the limited intervention because that really has never been adjudicated.
That's certainly not my intention. I don't know if it's helpful to the court, but in numerous other cases, some of which we've cited in our briefs, virtually identical pleadings to those submitted in this case have resulted in the grant of limited intervention.
Ones that say that they should not be denied or limited? Pleadings correct. That say that the intervention should not be denied or limited?
Correct.
And that was what, in cases that you're talking about, that's the way the pleadings were written?
Yes. I don't know how to be more candid about this. In my experience practicing law, when one submits alternative arguments, then the least forceful of the alternatives submitted are what the court will grant.
All right. So let's assume that it's a case of issues before us. Why are you entitled to a limited intervention?
Because under Forest Conservation Council, which is still good law, the applicants here have interests that are protectable under some law which relate to the subject matter of the action which will be impaired by a judgment. And in this case, I think presents fairly tangible and uncomplicated facts. You have the Forest Service who is in the process of designating a trail system, and you have parties who are virtually certain to be dissatisfied with whatever the Forest Service's ultimate decision is. And so the plaintiffs in the case are going to complain about the miles that were designated, and my clients are frustrated by the miles that they rode on yesterday, figuratively speaking, that they can't ride on now or tomorrow.
Mr. Turk, here's the problem I have with the argument you're making now about, well, on the as-of-right part of the case, you know, that the district court should have at least considered limited intervention. But as Judge Fischer says, I don't really see that you argued it to the district court. And my problem is, although you cite, you know, numerous other district courts, apparently, which say, you know, considered part of the overall remedy. But the problem is, you see, for me, it's very difficult to reverse a district court for failing to make a ruling on a question that was not really called to his attention. I mean, no one said, well, Your Honor, if you deny, you know, intervention as a right overall, we requested you at least give us, you know, intervention at the remedy stage. Something to tell the district court that you wanted something, so the district court make a specific ruling on that issue, and then so, you know, there's something concrete to overrule. You know, to me, it's unfair to the district judge.
I understand the concern. I mean, in the future, I suppose I could craft the pleadings differently, but then I'll be subject to the other side of that analysis, which is that we'll never get anything more than limited intervention.
That's why you were afraid to mention it.
Correct.
Because
let me try to put it in practical terms. For instance, in the District of Montana, I'm involved in numerous cases. We request upfront intervention permissively under Rule 24B because in the District of Montana, it has without exception been granted. So we have a sense of the lay of the land. In the District of Idaho right now, we're not getting even permissive intervention under 24B. In this case, it was denied.
You haven't argued yet about that, but let's go back to limited intervention for a minute. All of the cases in which limited intervention was granted, as far as I can tell, were cases in which, and I guess this goes to the question of whether you would have intervention of right anyway, given your position in this case. Because I understand that you have a sufficient interest in it, and it's funny law. You have sufficient interest to file a lawsuit, presumably on your own behalf, if you had properly exhausted your administrative remedies, which you probably haven't. So, because otherwise, I assume you would just file your own lawsuit, and they'd be consolidated, and that would be the end of it.
Well, that may be the next step in the chess game, if that's what we want to call it.
But you have a problem there, don't you, which is you haven't...
Mr. Qualley has exhausted his administrative remedies.
So even though you seem to have a sufficient standing, given the standing rules for NEPA cases, I assume you could make adequate allegations and you could bring a NEPA case. That's an assumption, but let's assume it. Still, it seems dubious to me that you have a protected legal interest of the kind that triggers intervention of right. I don't think they're the same. I don't know why they're not the same, but they don't seem to be the same.
In other words, are you alluding to, I think respondents make this point in their brief about under NEPA, the interest is in correct process and...
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that as far as I could tell, in every instance in which this limited intervention for purpose of the injunction was granted, the entity had some, what was a permittee or a potential developer or somebody with a much more traditional legal interest in what the resulting action was going to be. And I understand there's sort of an anomaly between the fact that you have sufficient standing to bring the lawsuit, but quite possibly, I think, not a sufficient interest to support intervention of right in either instance.
I think there's two things I want to say to that. And I think what I understand you'd be saying is that our interests here are admittedly more amorphous. I'd characterize them as recreational and aesthetic interests, which are what the plaintiffs have.
Exactly, and certainly, therefore, in the abstract, they could support standing for a lawsuit.
But notwithstanding the less tangible nature of the interests, the role that we can have in the remedy phase is significant and concrete. My clients know where these trails are. The plaintiffs in their complaint are asking the court.
But is there any, what I'm asking you is this, is there any case in which the party permitted to intervene as of right in a NEPA case was situated to the case as you are, even in the limited intervention circumstance?
Yeah. Are you saying under Rule 24A as of right?
Because you're asking as of right, even in a limited sense.
I can't identify the case right now.
I don't think there is one.
I've done more than 20 and fewer than 50 of these cases probably, and we've gotten limited intervention in everyone except this one. And I can't right now say that.
Well,
yes.
I'm talking about Court of Appeals cases. I couldn't find one.
Typically, the issue isn't appealed. I mean, that's the and I guess
your argument is that your recreational interest is good enough for standing. It's good enough for limited intervention.
And yes, and hopefully we've identified what I would call the gaps to use what the language Judge Gould used in noting perhaps the value of en banc review in the Bellegarde case we cited, is that there are gaps in the federal defendant case law. And I don't want to forget to mention it today, but it's not case law that precludes my clients and only my clients. It's case law that would presumably preclude plaintiffs from intervening in the case that we would bring. It's case law that precludes states, local counties, anybody who's a non-federal party from intervening in what's inherently a Solomonic, you know, splitting of the baby that nobody's happy with anymore.
Well, finally, what about the permissive intervention issue? I mean, you don't, I guess you're not spending much time on that because it's an abuse of discretion standard, but I gather you do have an argument about why there was an abuse of discretion.
You're correct, Your Honor. It is an abuse of discretion standard, and you know, typically, we outline the interest for the court, we outline the rule, we somehow convince the court that we're pretty good guys and we're not going to rock the procedural boat, and we get in. For whatever reason, we didn't get in here. This is an appropriate point to raise a point, I think, that relates to the question Judge Tashima asked a minute ago, which is, in the Kootenai Tribe case, which incidentally came from the same district judge, in a role reversal situation where some of the same preservation interests were the interveners, they got in under Rule 24B permissively, which formed the procedural foundation from which the only appeal moved forward, the district court's ruling was overruled, and you know, we got new case law on intervention in the process. So, you know, I think that our interests are sufficient.
So what's the abuse of discretion here?
The abuse of discretion, as we read it, is that the district court essentially concluded that we had bypassed the administrative process and that we had nothing to offer to the proceedings. And I'm not going to regurgitate the cites. This was a truncated process. That's the gravamen of plaintiff's complaint, is that count one of their complaint is that they bypassed proper public participation. So there wasn't much process to participate in.
Well, is there some kind of case law that supports the district court in the sense that it says, well, you know, participation in the administrative process is not a prerequisite but an important factor in permissive intervention?
I think there is, yes. I view the case law as evolving to give the district court more discretion in that regard. But again, the record is there. I don't know how we could have participated more. The appeals were all consolidated.
Well, did the district court say none of your clients, I mean, they did not participate or not participate enough or what?
I read that. I read the district court as saying that, which I think is simply erroneous. I also think that the Berg case holds that the circuit court must take as true the non-conclusory allegations of the intervention paper. In other words, the district court opinion states that we haven't seen the record, but they only refer to the fact they made comments. Well, number one, that reference would be sufficient, and number two, the administrative record has been submitted and shows extensive comments submitted by the organizations, by Mr. Qualley, who's a member of at least two of the organizations. I realize the abuse of discretion is a steep slope for me to climb, but the district judge simply didn't hit the right phrases in asserting it here. I will I'll excuse myself since my time has run out, and if you see fit to allow me rebuttal, I will be gracious.
Okay. I'll try and be gracious, too.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Megan Anderson, and I'm representing appellees, Prairie Falcon Audubon and the Wilderness Society. And given your questions to opposing counsel, I'm going to jump right into some of the things that you brought up and see if I can't respond to those. First, the opposing counsel noted that they had requested in other cases, that the briefing in this case was similar to other cases where they had requested limited intervention. And in fact, that's not true from my review of those cases. The cases that were cited were in the reply brief were California versus United States Department of Agriculture. And in that case, Blue Ribbon Coalition actually specifically asked the court, and I quote, assuming these decisions govern this motion and that limited intervention is the most available to any private party under Rule 24A, the recreational group should be granted intervention and full party status in any remedial phase in this case. So in that briefing, they actually did address the issue and specifically seek it, in contrast, as you noted, to this case where they actually specifically stated the opposite, that the court should not allow limited intervention in this case and should grant them, again, and I quote, full rights as a party. Another case cited in the reply brief, Riverhawks, I unfortunately couldn't find the briefing for that online, but the court did note there that there was a significantly protectable interest. And this is something else that the court touched on in their questions to opposing counsel. And that is what you were referring to that's required in this case. It's more than just an interest that the case law requires. It's a significantly protectable interest. And the courts have found that the interest both has to be one protected under some law. So it's not just an interest, but one that's protected under some law.
Well, why isn't it good enough that it's protected under the APA because it's good enough to support a lawsuit under the APA? I mean, I don't understand that. It seems very weird that you could bring the lawsuit but that you don't have a good enough interest to intervene.
That may be a good question to consider, but I think given the case law in this circuit, the test is that it needs to be a interest protected under some law.
Well, it is. My posit is that it is protected under some law, the Administrative Procedure Act.
Well, in this case, it actually isn't protected. Given your premise, in this case, it's not protected under the APA because, and this gets into, again, the district court's decision that was discussed, that the appellants didn't preserve their right
that.
To.
I understand that, and that may be the answer in this case. But if that's the answer in this case, it means the whole none but the federal defendant rule is irrelevant. These people wouldn't be entitled to intervention of right no matter what.
And my clients don't take any position on the none but federal defendant rule in this case, but I think that is a tension between the cases that allow intervention as of right in a limited capacity versus just not allowing it at all, which is perhaps what I'm trying to get at is the federal defendant rule, by its very term, says that there's no interest in that the applicant interveners cannot show a significantly protectable interest in the proceedings.
I think maybe this is what Judge Berzon says, but I just fail to see why, if you have a protectable interest, why he doesn't have one. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Why doesn't he have a protectable interest?
In this case, I think it's
because it's the same as yours, but for his purpose, it's not enough, although it's enough for your purpose.
Well, leaving aside the exhaustion problem, mm-hmm. I understand there's an exhaustion problem, but leaving that aside, why not?
I think it's because it's a none, and this is my understanding, that it's a none but federal defendant rule, not a none but plaintiff rule. In this case, plaintiff's claims were alleging issues with the Forest Service decision and with various problems in the way that decision was rendered under various environmental laws.
But if you win, I mean, there would be significant, you know, remedial issues, right?
Yes.
And don't you think then he should have, so to speak, standing on those?
In this case, no.
No, because it makes your job harder.
In the remedy phase at this trial, because they haven't shown that they have an interest in the remedy either, which is what I was going to get to earlier, that there's...
In what? I'm sorry?
They haven't shown a significantly protectable interest in the remedy, or really an interest in the remedy, period. That
well, their interest, as I understand it, is the remedy going to be that there is no travel on these roads in the meanwhile, or is it going to be something else?
No, it's good. The injunctive relief that was requested by plaintiffs in this case was that the routes be scaled back to what they were before the decision notice and the finding of no significant impact by the Forest Service to those routes that were designated before this decision. So prohibiting cross-country travel, which was an issue that was raised by plaintiffs in their concerns with the decision, but basically putting it back to the routes that have actually gone through a NEPA process and had actually been designated.
And for example, it could be, I don't know if it is, but I know this happens in NEPA cases, it could be that the conclusion might be that the NEPA statement is inaccurate with regard in some respects and inadequate in some respects but not in other respects, and they might therefore argue that only some of the roads should be closed, not all of the roads, and you may take a position to the contrary. Also, I gather that they're arguing, well, at least that, right?
Yes, but again, this gets back to do they have an interest in making that determination? I mean, essentially what plaintiffs are asking...
But then we come to Judge Tsushima's question. If you have an interest in not having the roads, why don't they have as good an interest in having the roads?
Because I think our interest is in having the Forest Service comply with National Environmental Policy Act, the National
Forest
Service...
Well, that isn't your interest, because that does not get you into court. That isn't. I can't show up in court and say that. I have to show up in court and say, as you know, I live near there, and I go to this forest, and I like to see the beautiful birds in the forest, and that's the problem.
Right, and again, I think that's what the appellants could have done in this case. I mean, the claims that they were attempting to assert, and again, this gets back to the context in which this motion to intervene was brought, they were attempting to bring in cross-claims to this case that were asserting some of those things, in fact, inserting some of the very things that plaintiffs asserted in this case. And thus, they were acting more almost as plaintiffs than in seeking to defend
But let's assume we're beyond that because of the federal defendant rule. We're not talking about that. We're talking about limited intervention.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying they can't do it because they don't have a significant protected interest.
Yes, and that's what this court's case law very clearly holds, that there needs to be some interest that's legally protected.
Okay, so what case, if it's so clear, what's the case you're most relying on?
The Sierra Club case is 995 F. 2nd at 1482 is one that gets into this notion that there's a two-part test to support intervention as of right, that the interest is protected under some law and that there's a relationship between the legally protected interest and the claims at issue. I think illustrative in that case is this court discusses the Supreme Court's decision in Donaldson, which first discusses this notion of a legally protectable interest. And there the Donaldson case was one where the IRS sought employer's records relating to Donaldson's income taxes. He was an employee of a circus, and they sought the income tax records of the employee. And Donaldson sought to intervene in that case. And the court noted that while he had an interest in the case, as here, he had an interest in the outcome of the case because if the records were turned over and it was disclosed that he owed more taxes than he had paid, then certainly he would have an interest. But that he had no legal privilege or other right to keep the employer from giving those records to the IRS. So while he had an interest, it was one that he couldn't protect. He had no proprietary right, he had no privilege, he had no means by which to restrict the employer from giving those records to the IRS. And thus the court held that he didn't have a sufficient claim of interest to justify intervention. I think it's very similar to the case here where while motorized users certainly have an interest in the outcome of this litigation, they don't have one that's protected.
But that case did not involve the anomaly that's bothering us here, because there's no doubt that he could not have filed that lawsuit or one like it, right? But here we have a situation where he could have filed this lawsuit or one like it. In fact, he may well go ahead and do it now. So that's the part. Why there is a preference for fractionated litigation rather than unified litigation, I don't understand.
And I think, again, that's what the district court got to in discussing and getting to the notion of that the appellants were trying to bring in these cross-claims when they actually could not, and this gets, you know, you mentioned, again, gets back to the exhaustion point, but they could not have actually brought a
case. But he says Mr. Quayle could. So Mr. Quayle goes next week and files the case and has the claims in the cross-claim. And he's claiming that the NEPA statement is wrong in the other direction. He can do that. And if he can do that, I'm assuming he can do that, then why do we want them two different lawsuits?
Again, I think it just goes back to the facts of this case. Mr. Quayle isn't a party to this lawsuit.
I understand. But the way you're arguing it, it wouldn't this is why I told you to put aside the exhaustion problem, because the way you're arguing it, it wouldn't matter, right? Because he still wouldn't have the significant protected interest that you're insisting upon, even if he exhausted.
Mr. Quayle may.
Not Mr. Quayle. The current putative intervenors. Suppose they'd exhausted vigorously. You'd mm-hmm. still be arguing the same thing, wouldn't you?
I think that's because, again, that it is required that it's a legally protected interest under the case law, so I'd be arguing the same thing. And I understand that's you're sort of having a problem with that, that notion, and I've been just structuring my argument according to the case law of the circuit. But it is important to note, I think, that plaintiffs' claims were brought under these laws that do require procedure. And so there's this idea that is there really an interest in not following that procedure, and that seems to be what is getting confused here and conflated with this notion of interest, is that the motorized users seem to be saying that they have an interest in the Forest Service not complying with the National Environmental Policy Act or these other acts in designating this road, at least when they're seeking to intervene.
Oh, they're saying that they have an interest in demonstrating that they did comply or that they didn't comply in a different way.
Which I think is, again, would be appropriate if they were bringing that as a claim as a plaintiff. But here they're seeking to intervene as a defendant in this lawsuit to theoretically.
What about the permissive intervention issue?
Permissive intervention, it sort of unfortunately brings up some of these same issues, because the district court found that basically that they hadn't participated adequately in the district court proceedings to justify permissive intervention. And again, I think here the real.
Why isn't putting in 4 pages of comments in the context of these proceedings sufficient?
Largely, I think, because we need to look at this in the context of what was happening when this motion to intervene was brought. And there's very broad discretion given to the district court in deciding on a motion for permissive intervention. And in this case, as mentioned, it was a case where the applicant interveners were seeking to intervene as defendant cross-claimants and bringing these claims which they otherwise couldn't have brought. And I think the district court found that the failure to participate in those administrative proceedings, if he allowed intervention at this time, would discourage others in the future from participating.
Well, he could presumably have limited the permissive intervention to the existing lawsuit and not allowed a cross-claim. In fact, I don't know if you ever get cross-claims as a permissive intervener. I think you get to take the case as your final. So I don't think that's the question.
I think, and again, I think it just gets back to the district court's discretion. He certainly supported.
Well, he didn't even talk about the extent of that. He cited one of the interveners, I think, or one of the putative groups, but he didn't talk about the one that put in the 4 pages of comments, did he?
No. He said that there wasn't sufficient participation by any of.
As a matter of fact, he didn't have the administrative record. He didn't even know what the participation had been.
No, the administrative record had not yet been
filed. So how could he possibly say they didn't participate? He didn't have the record.
He based that on the briefing, essentially.
He based it on the representations of you and the putative intervener, right, as to what happened below.
Yes.
And I think he treated the Quayle's comments as personal, because maybe he argued that, and not behalf of any organization.
And
I don't know what difference that makes.
It makes a difference in terms of the exhaustion, because comments submitted as an individual pursuant to Forest Service regulations.
Well, it might make a technical difference, but in terms of the interest for permissive intervention purposes, it clearly, you don't have to be a proper plaintiff to have permissive intervention, so the, right?
No, but that's not the only basis for the
district court's decision. All right, so therefore the question is, were the issues they're raising before the agency, or was the agency being sandbagged? And exactly who raised them, what difference does it make?
Again, this gets back to the Forest Service regulations and exhaustion, but I think the point here is that it wasn't, while the district court considered the participation at the administrative stage, it wasn't the only thing that he based his ruling on either. There were also findings that interveners wouldn't add anything significant to the litigation since it was litigation or was claims that the federal defendants were obligated to defend, that the interveners didn't have, again.
That's a ruling, that's a per se ruling that would say you never get intervention in one of these cases.
Well, and my time has expired.
You can answer that question.
I think that that in this case it is up to the district court's discretion to decide on permissive intervention. And here, given the context in which these claims were brought, where it seemed that they were trying to get things into court without following the proper administrative procedures, that the district court decided that intervention wasn't appropriate in this case and based that on factors which this court has held are valid for a consideration of permissive intervention.
Could I ask just an informational question? All right.
Yeah.
Judge Fisher?
Sure.
Did the Forest Service take a position either way on this motion to intervene?
No, they filed a brief discussing somewhat this issue of exhaustion and that interplay with intervention, but they did not take a position.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can have a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. As we noted at the beginning of our reply brief, the interesting thing about this appeal is that there's no party here defending the federal defendant rule. I understand there's an easy way out of this case. I urge you not to take it here. We have demonstrated this contradiction that Judge Berzon in particular has noted, that we could file our own lawsuit, and yet we elected not to do that. We elected to try to intervene in the existing case. We acknowledge all the limitations on the function that an intervener can serve, and yet we're somehow being punished for doing that and urged to do something different. With regard to the question of, quote, some law, this case is not at all like Donaldson, as counsel suggests. First of all, the interests under NEPA address the, quote, human environment. We address the breadth of those issues, of that interest, at pages 43 to 44 of our opening brief. Secondly, there is other related law here that protects our interests, the travel management rule, which we cite at page 7 of our reply brief, which directs the forest to consider effects on, quote, public safety, provision of recreational opportunities, access needs, conflicts among uses. Our clients have interest under the law here.
The problem is what you don't have ultimately is the right to tell the Forest Service to either open these lands or not open these lands. And that isn't even what the lawsuit's about, right? The lawsuit is about the decision-making process.
We don't have that right. I certainly acknowledge that, but neither do the plaintiffs. I mean, the point is that the agency here should be availed, the agency and the court should be availed of the benefit of diverse perspectives on the legal.
At bottom, are you asking us as a panel to call for an unbank vote on the federal defendant rule? Is that ultimately what you're asking us for?
I'm not. I mean, this issue is not going to go away. There are other cases that are presenting the issue, presumably to different panels. The simplest way to resolve this case is to reverse and remand with instructions. And it's specific.
On limited intervention?
On limited intervention.
Or permissive.
Or permissive. I personally limited.
You said don't take the easy way out. I didn't quite understand what you were at.
Well, I'm glad you asked that question because
that was almost rhetorical because we're running out of time, but it'd make it short.
I'll make it very short. As I indicated in the briefs, and I tried to today, there are a lot of unanswered questions and a lot of contradictions within the case law. I think it would greatly benefit not only your predecessors but parties in practice to clarify some of those gaps, specifically on things like interest, 24A versus 24B, and inadequacy of representation, because those are the things that are barring parties from rightful participation in these suits.
Okay. Thank you both. Very interesting argument. Case is submitted, and we'll stand in recess.